great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening or good morning, wherever you may be across this great land of ours. From the Tahitian and Hawaiian island chains in the west, eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south, all the way to South America, north to the pole and worldwide on the old internet. This is Coast to Ghost. That's Ghost to Ghost AM. All right, this is actually a very interesting night. We do it a few times a year now because it is so popular and for a really good reason. All we do all night long is tell ghost stories. Only there is usually not a big laugh at the end, because these are real. And that's, there are no guests. Not going to have a guest all night long. You are the only guest that will be here all night long. And the stories, well, they're up to you. But I have found over the months and years now that there is never, ever a shortage of ghost stories. Why are ghosts important? Well, because they answer the big question. They answer the big one, don't they? In other words, if there is life after death, if there is an existence after the physical existence, well then, obviously, a ghost or a demon or whatever's in the night, and it is usually in the night, in the dark, well then that sort of proves all of that, doesn't it? Now, some of this is going to be scary stuff. It always is, so the standard warning. You know, I mean, it is scary. So we're going to invite you, all of you, to pick up the telephone here shortly and tell us your ghost story. And when all of the evidence is amassed of this 5 hours added to all the other 5-hour programs I've done on this subject, to not believe is nearly impossible. Now, last night I got a call that I want to deal with very quickly before we get underway. Maybe I'm just lucky. I don't know. But those of you who listened to the program last night may have heard a caller who said, "Hey, Art, did you see the Democrats debate?" Which I did not, by the way. I saw the CNN recap of the debate. That was enough. But he said, "Oh, God, Art, you've got to see it, because right in between the two candidates, Gore and Bradley, if you look between them, there's no question about it, there's an evil entity that you can see." And oh my God, there is. Now, this evil entity between the two major political candidates for the Democrat nomination, it's all over the net. It's on all kinds of news groups. It's all over the net today, since that man was on my show last night. Not only can you see it in the still grab of the picture from the debate, which we now have on our website, right now, in the night, in the dark. God, it's an eerie picture. It was a Time CNN Election 2000 debate, and if you look, I kind of joked with the guy, and I said, "Which way was the entity looking? More toward Gore or more toward Bradley?" And he said, "Right in the middle." And I went, "Okay, send me a copy." Well, boy, did I get copies. And then it just, during the day, it spread all over the net. And so, of course, we have a copy for you on the website tonight. In the cold, in the dark. So, I mean, make of this what you will. If that's not an evil entity, I don't know what the hell it is. Now, I suppose I could solicit a guy from NASA who would come on and say, well, it's just a trick of light and shadows. And you can say, I guess, it's just a trick of light and shadows. But I'll tell you what. This trick of light and shadows was seen and can be seen during the video of the event, if you happen to tape it, or during the live event itself, or here in a still photograph. So it's not a jacked around picture. Whatever it is, it's really there. And it's on my website now. You judge for yourself. I'm sure the pixel people will come out in droves. And this is not a political comment. Had this occurred between Bush and McCain, I'd be putting it up on my website because it's a mind blower. So, much as many of you will no doubt think it's a political comment, it's not. It's just a kaboom picture. I mean, if this is not an evil entity, it looks evil, then I don't know what the hell it is. That might be the right phrase for it, too. Hell, I don't know. I have no idea what it is. I've got a couple of kind of interesting stories that I want to read you, very short, that have been sent in. And you're welcome to send them in. Now, I, the really long ones, I just don't have time to read them. But if you want to send a ghost story by email, you can do that. If you want to send a ghost photograph, and here's where the real work comes in for my webmaster. Keith, of course, is with me during the night, in the dark, the cold. And I'm going to tell you, if you have a good ghost photograph, and you have it scanned, or you can scan it, then we will accept and begin to post ghost photographs as we get them during the night tonight. Where to send them, you ask. Answer, send them to webmaster@artbell.com. That's it, webmaster@artbell.com. And Keith will take the best. Now, we're only looking for the very best of the ghost photographs. And we sure are starting out the night with a bang with this thing from the Democrat debate. This is just effing unbelievable, you know? I mean, it really is. So you got to see this. You really have to see it. It's on my website now. As you send them in, we will take the best of the lot, and please only send the good ones, and we will post them. Not everything is going to get posted. The best candidates will. But since that guy called last night, the net is alive with this photograph. It's just everywhere. Remember, you heard it first, right here. And the following from Montreal in Canada. Art, you may want to read this story on Ghost to Ghost. My brother-in-law died of liver cancer on July 24th, 1991. This young man was 43 years old when he died. He was always a strong-willed man, even till his death, as he had fought his battle for 9 years and never wanted to give up. Even though he was going through much pain, he always kept up a most vigilant fight because of his character, kind of person he was. At the time of his death, he actually died of a sudden massive heart attack, along with other complications. It was almost as though he had been totally caught off guard in the middle of his battle. On the day of his funeral, everyone had gathered inside the church, his coffin set in the center aisle. Due that Montreal here is very hot and humid at that time of year, all of the windows on the left side of the church were open for ventilation. Halfway through the service, everyone was seated quietly. I was just about to get up and do a reading from the gospel. Just as I was taking my place in front of the church, there was total silence for this brief pause. I'm sure all of you know about those. They happen, you know, when nobody says anything, just prior to an event. All of a sudden, it was as though someone would have walked along the left side and closed the five windows along the wall consecutively and abruptly. Boom, 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 boom. Like that. One right after the other. Everybody inside that church froze in disbelief because there was no one around anywhere near the windows. There wasn't an air draft because there wasn't any wind. And there was a bit of distance in between the last aisle window and the two windows that were up beside the altar. These two windows also shut in direct timing as though someone were walking slowly to shut the windows. And so a final boom, boom, as they closed. By then, this had gotten the parish priest's attention as the two candles at the front of the coffin burnt toward the left side of the church. The flame then came back into a straight-up position. The priest quickly stopped the service, walked to the coffin, blessed it while anointing the coffin with holy water. He seemed to be rather perplexed about the whole matter, as everyone attending the service were all shaken up by what had just transpired. No other incident happened during the priest's blessings. The priest stood in front of the coffin while murmuring a few inaudible words. He then had to say Our Father once. He went back to the altar, resumed the service, and gave me the signal that was to start my reading from the Bible. After the service, my brother-in-law's mother asked the parish priest what had just happened. And he quickly told her that was a manifestation, but would not get into any other details. Thanks for your attention to the letter, signed Philip, a French last name from Montreal. Give it on the air. And then there's one more here. And I'm not sure what you're going to make of this. A brief bio, my timeline. Born and raised in Southern California, 6 years paid call firefighter, 6 years security police, U.S. Air Force, Lowry Air Force Base, Gunsan Air Force Base, Wright Pad Air Force Base, Ontario Air National Guard, formerly Air Defense Command, 5 years as a police officer in Southern California. And I now own a telecommunications business, and about 4 years ago I moved my family to the Mojave Desert. I like to watch the stars and breathe air, if you know what I mean. I do. And now his story. Dear Art, there's a little bit of language in this, folks, so a little bad language, so get the kids out of the room. It really has to be said because it's in context. Dear Art, in the fall of 1977, I was a young airman assigned to the 8th Tactical Fighter Squadron, Kusan Air Force Base, Korea. As you know, the enlisted barracks on most air bases resemble a Motel 6. I know. This was almost the case at Kusan. We were two airmen to a room, typical, two beds, two chest of drawers, and one refrigerator. That's a luxury. My roommate was a good friend and quite a character. He snored and sleepwalked, talked in his sleep, and then snored some more. This was pretty much his routine sack time. We usually hit the sack about the same time every night at about 2200 hours. That, folks, translates to about 10 o'clock at night. The night that would change my life forever was no exception. First, you must know a little history about Kunsan and the bloody battles that were fought there for more than 40 years, or 40 years ago. During the Korean conflict, Kunsan was an important seaport south of Seoul along the coast of the Yellow Sea. Both sides battled fiercely to control this area throughout the war, and many soldiers on both sides, as well as civilians, lost their lives. Many atrocities were reported to have been committed against the captured Allied forces and sympathetic civilians. Out of respect for the families of the many victims, I will not comment any further about the war. After the war, a joint South Korean and American Air Force base was built over the old military site. As I stated, it was late in the fall of 1977 for two nights in a row. I'd been awakened from a deep sleep at exactly 0100 hours, 1 o'clock in the morning. There was no loud noise, no alert aircraft taken off, nothing to account for the sudden state of consciousness. Each time, I slowly opened my eyes, looked at my digital clock on the dresser, and, with the soft light coming through the windows, I could see my roommate sleeping soundly across the room. Each time, I lay there in bed and listened for an intruder. I arose and cleared the room, making sure everything was secure. It was on the third night that I was again separated from my sleep. Again, it was exactly 0100 hours, as before. I didn't move, listen for the sounds of an intruder. Again, nothing. Nothing, except this time, the feeling was different. Something was wrong. All of my senses were screaming at me. Kind of like just before you kick in a door on a drug bust. Well, a cop would know about that. I glanced around the room, every muscle tensed, ready to defend myself. It was then that I saw it, and I can only describe it as a male figure in many shades of gray. He appeared to be of Korean descent, 5'2", stocky build, wearing long pants and a shirt, open vest. He was standing in the middle of the room and facing the wall where my bed was. I just laid there as still as I could, and I visually searched him for a weapon, saw none. He looked more like a farmer than anything else. After a long moment, he moved forward to the foot of my bed, turned facing me, and slid sideways between my bed and my roommate's dresser. As he did this, I reached under my mattress and pulled out my buck knife. Most of my body was still under the covers when the intruder stopped and just stared at me. I stared back, my right hand firmly holding the knife with a closed fist and the open blade facing forward. It seemed like a lifetime. But in those milliseconds, my mind raced. Could this be a lost civilian employee? Maybe he's drunk, just a harmless old man. Then I remembered who I was and the sensitive assignment that I was chosen to perform. I cursed the system for not allowing off-duty cops to carry their firearms. I surmised that this was an assassin, a Korean national paid to silence a young, idealistic American, i.e. me, who had gone deep undercover to discover how millions of dollars a month in supplies found their way off base. We'll save that story for another time. He just stood there, his arms at his sides, down at my feet, and I just lay there ready to strike. Then it happened. In an instant, the man leaned forward and reached out both of his hands. I responded with every ounce of strength I had, arched my back, and with one fluid movement, I slammed my backside down into the bed and flew forward, bringing my knife up in a tight arc, in a slashing motion across the man's throat. I didn't miss. I couldn't have missed. Why didn't my hand hurt? Where was the blood? I fell back onto my bed and just sat there trying to process what had happened. My knife hand flew right through his neck. It was at that moment that I realized that he was translucent. I was able to eke out a holy S-H-A-T. My heart was in my throat. I could feel it pounding. As I fell back from my failed attempt, the spirit stood straight up, brought his hands to his sides, leaned forward, and with what I can only describe as a startled look, he cocked his head to the left, just stared at me for about 5 seconds, and then with both hands reached down and touched the blanket that was still covering my feet. I felt the blanket tighten over my toes, and this lasted for about 3 seconds. Then he stood erect, slid out from the foot of my bed, and turned to the left, facing the windows, and moved forward, continuing forward, He elevated about 3 feet into the air and vanished without a trace. And for privacy reasons, there's a little more that I'll hold back. What do you think that man saw? The idea, right? What we're talking about is real. I believe that. And if what we're talking about is real, then it goes a long way toward answering the biggest question of them all, doesn't it? Are we more than just physical beings? This is Coast to Coast AM. All right, what follows is nothing but ghost stories, and they all come from you. If you have a really good story, a really good ghost story, then call me. If you don't, then sit back and listen. And by the way, one more time, the most astounding photograph you may ever see is on my website right now. It occurred during the Democrat debate. Between Bradley, between Gore, there is obviously the image of some kind of evil entity. Or entity. Maybe you're going to say it's not evil. It looks evil, though. Now, this is no Photoshop lash-up. It can be seen on the video. It was seen live, as my caller said last night. It's seen on the video if you've got a video of the debate. And this is simply a grab photo from that. It's all over the net tonight since the man called last night, and we've got it on the website tonight, and it's a blowaway. A total blowaway. You go take a look for yourself, and you tell me what's there. A trick of light and shadows. Well, maybe. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You bet. Where are you?
Grapevine, Texas. My name is Dean, and I just thank you so much for giving a voice to stories like this.
Sure.
This is really the first time I'll ever be able to really, I've ever really told the whole thing, and it started out really when I was 4 years old. And I've kind of, in the sense, of had that sixth sense about, you know, thinking I've seen things that maybe be in tricks of light or
shadow,
like that, and shadow. But yet, as I get older and as I get a clarity now, I see things for what they truly were.
Uh-huh.
And when I was 4 years old, let me just take you back quickly to I was in Key West, Florida, and it was a time where I didn't have a television or even saw a movie until I was 6 years old. So I didn't have that whole environment blemishing my mind.
Sure.
And I was living in Key West, Florida at the time. It was literally an Ernest Hemingway novel. And when I was 4 years old, I remember walking out the back of my grandfather's house and being literally blinded by the sun. Well, in Key West, Florida, that's nothing, you know, an occurrence or anything like that. But the thing that shocked me so much was the color of the blindness. It was almost like a rainbow effect. Well, as I turned, I remember as I was turning one way to just get that out of my vision, I was suddenly then blinded by the sun. And to me, that was such a shock because the first thing I think is I'm, you know, seeing the sun or a rainbow effect. And even as a four-year-old child, I remember the first thing I remember doing is just automatically reacting by looking to my left and bam, the sun hits me. I remember then reacting back, coming back to what I saw initially, and it was gone. And it was just until recently that I really just started to see a real clear picture of what it was.
And
it was
what do you think it was?
I think it's one of the, it's literally the sixth sense I think we have is when we're a small child and we're uninhibited by so many of the societies.
Yeah, I hear you. In other words, without having yet had our minds shaped and filtered by the media, TV, and all the rest of it, we're open to all of that until the door slams shut.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you what, then after that, it was almost, it was an amazing thing. I went to kindergarten, and I'm sitting there, I can remember sitting in kindergarten on a swing set, and I'm 5 years old, still haven't gone to the TV route yet, in a private kindergarten of all the things, but I'm off in a little corner just swinging away, and I don't hear the bell, right? I'm kind of off in my little world, and I remember suddenly stopping and realizing there's nobody out there, and it's just literally dead silent. It went from like 500 kids to zero, just me. And I can remember the stillness being so just, it was like almost like silence truly as a sound. I remember looking up in the sky, and literally in the same color and the transparency, I am then given a almost a short movie on a cloud, and it looks like alley of like a 1920s scene. And I remember as a child just being stunned by watching this and thinking, what am I watching? Because it was almost like watching a, almost like a 1920s back alley of what life was wanted there. And all of a sudden, bam, it was gone. And I was thinking, okay, this was strange.
Like some sort of time slip or something.
Exactly. It was almost like an, I'm a very old soul, I believe that, because my family traces back to Ireland and just to, literally back to the 453. My family tree, I think somebody in Britain right now is working on it. It's so amazing. And I'm a firm believer in old souls. It's like why kids play piano when they're 2 or 3 years old. Why, you know, because we're just carryovers.
Then obviously you're a firm believer in reincarnation.
Oh, much, much so.
That's the only way you'd get to be a very old soul. All right, sir. Well, thank you very much. But we come back. It's plausible. You know, the whole reincarnation scenario is utterly plausible. It is as plausible as anything else. And there are many, many good arguments in its favor, and I lean toward it. I embrace very little in life, actually, despite what you hear me talk about here on the air. You'd be quite surprised. I embrace very little as fact, unless I can lay my hands on it, ring it out, know it, feel it, see it. Then it's a fact for me, which makes me a pretty big skeptic, despite what I do here on the air. But reincarnation, I don't know. It makes sense, doesn't it? East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Mary Ann from Syracuse, New York.
Syracuse, great to have you.
WSYR.
Mm-hmm.
I live in a house where a lot of strange occurrences have happened. The house has been in our family since 1950.
Right.
And we had my aunt and her husband owned it. She passed away. We bought it. And my father and mother each passed away in the house. Well, I've had two strange occurrences with my telephone. I'll tell you about one of them. It was 1989 in the fall, and I was sitting in my front parlor watching television. It was getting late. And so I turned the television off and laid down on the couch and covered up with a quilt. And I keep a light in my kitchen, which shines into my little dining room and then my parlor.
Sure.
And I have my phone in my dining room. And I fell asleep. And I woke up and I heard somebody talking, and I live alone. So I pulled the quilt from my head, and I'm looking into the parlor, and I see a man standing talking on my telephone.
In your house?
In my house. And my first thought was, I didn't lock the door. Somebody's getting in the house.
Of course.
And so I'm lying there very still because I figure maybe he can't see me, and maybe he'll just rob and get out of here.
Exactly what most people would do.
Right. And he's talking on the phone. I'm hearing him saying, oh, yes, I've got to get that done. I've got a lot of work to do. And he's going on and on about work, but I couldn't catch what he was talking about. And he was a young man, probably in his 30s, and he had a baseball cap on.
So, in other words, he was talking as though he were speaking on the phone in his house.
Right. As if he came in from outside and said, oh, I got to call somebody.
Yeah, I've got you. Right.
So I'm just like, oh, my God, what is he doing? So I'm very, very quiet. But at the same time, I'm reaching. I had my coffee table there. And I'm reaching because I had a pair of scissors there. And I figure I'm going to get the scissors because if he comes in and tries to attack me, I'm going to attack him, you know?
Bingo. Yeah, of course. So
I'm lying there still, but my hand is going, and I hear him talking. And as I said, he was a young man in his 30s. He had a baseball cap on. A jacket, jeans. I could see that he had like a blondish red hair or a beard. And I'm praying as I'm watching him. He gets done with the phone, puts the phone down. He turns, he walks into the parlor. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, here it comes. He looks at me, smiles, and walks through the wall and disappears.
Walks through the wall?
Walks through the wall into my driveway. I jump up, look out, and there's nobody there. I came out and touched my phone, and it was warm, as if someone had been talking on the phone.
Oh, my.
But we've had many strange things.
Oh, my. What do you do after that? I mean, there you are standing over the phone with a phone in your hand, and it's warm, and you've just been through this and seen a guy walk through a wall. So
I just sat up for quite a while after that. And we've had many strange occurrences. When I slept in the back room, I used to have something that used to get in bed with me.
What?
used to get in bed with me.
Oh, that's the worst. Now, if there's any sanctuary in the world, we all know it's the bed where you can pull the covers over
you. Well, you know, sleeping with sisters, of course, you know when someone gets up in the night and they're walking back in the bed and you can hear them breathing funny and walking up, trying to get back into bed.
Yeah.
And I would wake up and I would see this and the bed would go down and something would get into bed with me.
There would be a depression in the bed next to
you. Yes. And then something would get into bed with me and I could feel it moving as if getting cozy. We've had many strange.
May I ask? Now, here's what I've got to ask.
Okay.
How do you stop yourself from getting up and screaming bloody murder and running? Which would be what I'd do.
I was so scared. I just lay there, and many times I would say to it, "You stay on your side, and I'll stay on mine."
Really? And that worked?
Well, many times it would. My sister also had the same thing happen when she would stay in the back room, and she said something would grab her and get into bed, and I said, yes, it happens to me, too.
Oh, man.
And
I remember when you were kids, you drew lines down the middle of the bed, and you said, there's a line. You don't come over on my side.
And then another thing I had in my phone, about 2 years ago, I had to go in for tests on my heart.
Yes.
And I was waiting for the phone call for the doctor to schedule the test.
Right.
And I didn't have an answering machine at the time. So I had to go out, and I came home, and my phone rang, and the man on the phone said, your appointment is such and such. And I said, yes. He said, when I was called a little while ago, he says, I talked to the gentleman. And he said,
God.
And I said, gentleman? I said, I'm sorry, sir, I live alone.
Yes.
He said, no. He said, I talked to the gentleman, and he said he knew that you were going in for a test. He was very worried about you. And he said that he said you would be home soon. You went to the store. And I said, no, you must get me mixed up with somebody else. I live alone. He said, no, the man's name was Frederick. And I assumed he was your father, which was my father's name.
Oh,
I said to him, sir, you talk to a ghost because my father died in 1979.
And what did he say?
He was kind of petrified and said, no, he said, you're kidding me, aren't you? And I said, no, I said, I live alone. My father's name was Frederick, but he died here in the house in 1979.
Oh, my.
And you know that, when mediums talk about ectoplasm?
Of course.
Okay. Another time I was sitting watching television, and I have a corner cabinet. And I looked up, and I saw this green film on the corner cabinet. And it was like green smoke. And I watched, and what is that? And I'm looking, and I'm trying to see if there's something from outside flashing, and there was nothing. And it went behind my cabinet. So I asked a friend, and she said, that's what ghosts make as they're walking.
Yeah, I'd be out of it. Might I ask how you managed to stay in the house? I mean...
Well, I'll tell you, because my parents both died in the house, and
yes.
I believe that they are here. I've had an occurrence with my mother.
You know, but I must say, in so many ways, that really bothers me because, the implication is that you die in a house and you remain there forevermore. I mean, that isn't really our idea, the Christian idea of an afterlife, to be unseen and only occasionally apparently heard or seen as green slime and to continue in that way. It's just too much to think about.
Well, I do believe my mother is still around because when my aunt came in one weekend and we were sitting in the front room and we could smell, like, my mother would cook spaghetti sauce every time anybody came in.
Yes.
And my aunt said to me, Marianne, can't you smell that? And I said, it smells like spaghetti sauce. She said, it's your mother. It's your mother cooking sauce. And
do you still live in that house?
Yes, I do. Yes, I own the house.
You own the house?
Yes, I do.
So then, in a lot of ways, the young man, who was the young man, do you think?
I don't know.
No idea at all?
No idea. No idea at all.
Wasn't part of your family?
No, because I was asked that. Did your father look like that when he was young? My father was dark. No.
Obviously, yes. The answer is no.
No, I don't know. I have a Native American friend, and she told me that it may have been someone who years and years ago was killed in this area, and his ghost still walks through the area. And she says, because of the house, there could be a portal.
Yes.
And the ghost could be coming through.
Yes. Well, that may be.
Yeah.
But when something gets into bed with you and the bed depresses, and it cozies up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'd have a heart attack. I would have a heart attack. I'm sure I would.
I've been having things happen to me. My sister and I both have had things happen to us like that since we were children. If someone's going to die in the family.
So you're telling me then this is something you can actually get used to.
Yes, yes. You know, I'll tell you, when my, which I believe is my mother in the house, when I leave the house, I tell her to watch over it while I'm gone. And I feel that she's still in the house. Because after she passed away, I did see her in the house.
Oh.
And we could not find out who the house was insured by. Because I would help her pay the insurance, but I didn't know who it was insured by.
Right.
And I came into the front parlor, and I turned, and how you see, like a flash, you think it's something, a shadow.
Corner of your eye.
Right. Yes. And I saw my mother. And then I turned, and I saw my mother. And she was young. My mother died of cancer, and she was very old when she died. And this woman was young, very young, in her 30s. Like I remember my mother when I was a child.
Like in her prime.
Yes. And I said to her, oh, Mom, I says, I really wish you'd come back. We miss you so. And she said, nothing would make me ever come back to this planet.
Huh.
And I said, have you seen God? Have you seen Jesus? She said, yes.
Yes.
And I said, Mom, the house insurance, we don't know who the house insurance is from. And she told me the name. She said, you better pay it. It's due Halloween. I called the insurance agent. She said, yes, it's due Halloween.
Dear, I've got to go.
Okay.
That was a real beaut. Thank you.
Thank you.
Right. See, that's what I'm talking about. Everything there was all right, pretty much, except the bed part, the depression, and the cozying up. No way. It's actually Ghost to Ghost AM with Art Bell, and that's all we're doing all night long. The stories are from all of you. Ghost stories. Real ghost stories. As the first hour just demonstrated graphically. Now, how much synchronicity do you all believe in? I believe in some. Not that much. Last night, a man called the program. Many of you will have heard it. And he said, hey, Art, did you know that there was a ghost or a demon right between Al Gore and Bill Bradley in the debate on television? And I said, no. And he said, yes, it's a demon. And I said, okay, fine. Send me something. I'll take a look. And it's all over the World Wide Web today. I mean, it's all, since that man called last night, it's everywhere. And right now it's on my website, and I'll be damned if it's not that. I may be damned anyway. But first of all, I want to assure you this is not political. Had this apparition appeared in a McCain-Bush debate, I'd have it up there tonight too, but it didn't. It's in this one. And for all you pixel people who think somebody went to Photoshop and whopped this one up, wrong, they didn't. This was visible on the videotape itself. It was visible live during the show. And somebody, well, actually many somebodies, have grabbed the picture, and it's on my website right now, and it's a blowaway. There is something that would appear to be an entity between these two men. I joked with him last night saying, which way was he looking, you know, more toward Bradley or toward Gore? And he said, no, right down the middle. And he's right, right down the middle. Now, this would be the kind of thing that I'm sure that we could have a NASA expert on who would, you know, explain away as a trick of light and shadows. But it seems like an awful lot of synchronicity to me, since we were doing Ghost to Ghost tonight. Since that one man got through, since that one man told me about this, since it's all over the net now. You've got to see this. So anyway, we're telling ghost stories. More of that coming up. If you want to see the photograph, it's at www.artbell.com. Oh, and one more thing. If you have a good ghost photograph, and it's hard to believe we're going to get one better than the one they gave us in that political debate. God, this thing is incredible. But if you have a good ghost photo, send it to webmaster@artbell.com right now. webmaster@artbell.com. Keith will receive and kind of pour through and pick the best of the bunch. And we'll get those up during the period of the night, the program tonight, and go take a look. So, more in a moment. Back to the lines. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning. Hello there.
Good morning, Art.
Hi. Where are you?
I am right now in commute between Nashville and Knoxville, Tennessee.
All right. Glad to have you.
My name is Corey, and I have a couple for you if I have time.
Give me your best shot first.
Okay, my best shot is one that actually happened to me. I was with a friend of mine out in a field near where I live in Knoxville, and we were walking around. We had our BB guns, and we'd heard stories that where we were at was a place where there was a lot of Civil War action.
Sure.
I don't know if that's actually true or not. I've not been able to find any the authenticity of that. But we were on what would be described like as a logging road. Uh-huh. And we were walking down through there, and we were talking about the possibility of graves around there and stuff. And we looked up, and there were a pair of boots that were, you know, we saw them at first. But they started walking towards us, and all they were boots.
And slow down. You're on a road, and there's a pair of boots without a body nor legs nor anything else walking
right
toward you.
Right. And if you've ever been to any type of museum that has Civil War uniforms and stuff like that,
yes,
they resemble the boots that you would see with those type of uniforms. They were dusty. They weren't polished or anything like that. They appeared to be old, like they'd been used. They walked up. They were walking towards us, and we kind of froze. We didn't know what to do. This
mm-hmm.
was a few years, you know, quite a few years back. We just stood there.
Freezing is one of two possibilities.
Yeah.
If that happened, you either freeze or you run for your life. One of the two. Yeah. Now
they walked up. They stopped right in front of us. We both looked at each other. I bent down and tried to pick them up, and I couldn't grab them. And then they vanished.
Into thin air.
They were gone. We looked at each other again, and then that's when we both decided to do the second option, which was run.
Run. Yeah, I'm with you there.
We ran back to the house, and that was the last we went up onto that area. We were on motorbikes up in the woods. We ran back to them, went back to the house, and that was it.
That's one hell of a story.
And
that's really a true story?
Yes, sir, it is. It is. We told my dad about it, and he said he had heard about the Civil War deal going on around there and stuff like that, but you know he wasn't for sure exactly what all happened there, and
uh-huh.
so he tended to believe us a little bit too. So,
well, look, I can't tell you how I appreciate your story, and I'm better you than me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Take care. Oh boy. Boots disconnected from bodies, not good. Evil entities between debating presidential candidates, definitely not good. I'm not going to get over this one for quite a while. I mean, nowhere in the news, nobody'd seen it. I get a call from a guy last night, because he knows I'm doing a ghost show tonight. And I'll be damned if it's not real. And it is real. Now, the only thing you can argue with respect to this image is that it's some kind of trick of light and shadow, you know, the NASA story. That's all you can argue. That's it. Otherwise, it was seen live, it can be seen on the videotape, and on all the pictures circulating on the net since the call last night. It's just a total blowaway. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art?
Yes.
This is Liddy calling from Redmond, Washington.
Hi, Liddy.
Hey, we're listening to Como.
Como, yes, yeah. Indeed. 50,000 watts right in the middle of the AM dial on 1,000.
That's right. Hey, had a story for you. My father was a victim of a homicide back in 1976.
Sorry.
I was 9 years old.
Right.
And it was, the whole thing around that was just very bizarre. The early evening of his death, he dropped me off at my grandmother's where I was planning on spending the night. And, you know, it's my dad, and he's just dropping me off at grandma's. So I jump out of the car and run up the walkway. But something makes me stop and turn around and look at him. And we kind of just, you know, he was in the car, I was standing on the sidewalk, and everything kind of slowed down. And I knew that, you know, that was probably the last time I was going to see him. But, you know, as a little kid, I just kind of walked away and didn't really think anything of it. As it turns out, I didn't stay at my grandmother's at the last minute. I stayed at my aunt's house.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd gone to bed, and about 11 o'clock that night, I woke with a start, just not feeling well, you know, sick to my stomach and everything. And I was uncomfortable. Something was going on. So I get up, and I'm walking through the house by myself, and it's dark. And right as I walk past the phone, it rings. I pick up the phone, and someone says to me, "Your father's been shot."
Your father's been shot.
Exactly. And click, that was it. I got very sick. You know, I vomited and everything. I ran to the bathroom, vomited, woke my aunt up. You know, something's wrong. She's like, "What, what?" I said, "You know, the phone just rang."
Uh-huh.
She's like, "I didn't hear the phone ring." I said, "Yes, it did. The phone rang." And, no, you know, you just had a bad dream. Go back to sleep.
Yeah.
"No, I can't go to sleep." So I went in, laid on the couch. She went to bed. It's his sister, my father's sister. She went to bed. I'm lying there on the couch, and I know something's wrong. So I get up, and I call my uncle, my mother's brother.
Right.
And I ask him to let my grandmother know that something's happened to my father. And he's the same way. He's like, "No, just go, you know, you just had a bad dream. Go back to sleep."
Yeah.
"Go back to sleep."
Yeah.
So meanwhile, I'm trying to convince people, and I'm getting so upset and so distraught that my aunt starts paying attention to me. Within an hour, my grandmother was over at the house, and a friend of hers had called her to let her know that my father had been in an accident. They didn't know that he'd been shot, that he'd been in some sort of accident, and I'm trying to convince them he's dead. And immediately, of course, you know, they think I'm overreacting. I know he's been shot, he's been dead. And sure enough, right around that same time that I got the phone call, a little bit after 11, is right around the time that he died. And to this day, my uncle knows that I did call him to tell him that my father was dead, but no one else can, you know, confirm the fact that I heard the phone ring, that I picked up the phone.
Doesn't matter. Obviously it happened. Did you recognize the voice on the phone?
No, I didn't.
It was a strange,
I didn't recognize it as my father. To this day, you know, I've thought about it. I don't know who the person was. And the thing is, no one knew other than my grandmother and my, you know, that I had gone to spend the night at my aunt's house at the very last minute.
So they couldn't have even known you were there?
No. No.
You thought about it, I'm sure, many, many years.
Oh,
many a year. What do you think?
To be honest, I don't know. I do not know. My mother and I, obviously years later, we've talked about this, and there were several weird occurrences around that. At the same time that I woke with a start, she woke with a start, and she was maybe 15 miles away. And, you know, just feeling kind of sick to her stomach, knowing something was wrong.
All right, you know, as I'm trying to consider the prospect of spirits beyond life,
mm-hmm.
I absolutely understand that a human mind, we have very complex minds, and it may well be that when somebody close to you dies, there's a blast of energy that, and because we hear all these stories of people who literally feel it when somebody close to them dies or know it in some way. But when you add the dimension of a phone ringing,
mm-hmm.
and somebody telling you that your father has been shot and is dead.
Right.
Then you've crossed the line from what a living human brain can do, in my opinion, or might be able to do if you stretch your imagination, into an entire other area, the kind of area that I've been talking about tonight.
Oh, definitely. You know, I totally agree. I mean, as a 9-year-old, you know, I'm open to so many different things, you know, and I don't have all these, you know, preconceived notions of anything. And, and the only one that can back up my story is my uncle, who said that I did call him before anything really happened. But no one so far has, you know, admitted to calling me. No one knew I was there.
How old are you now?
I'll be 33 in March.
I sure appreciate your call.
Hey, thanks a lot, Art. Love your show.
Thank you. You see, that crosses the boundary, and the boundary, to me, is the ability, the artifact of a living human brain. Call it telepathy, call it whatever you want to call it, but when you add this dimension of the physicality of a phone ringing with a strange voice telling you something that it would not be possible for you to be told at that time, well, you decide. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Hi, this is George.
Hi, George. How are you?
Fine. I'm calling from Oakland.
Yes.
I got a story that goes, oh, by the way, I'm looking at your website. Yeah, that photo is very frightening.
Is that something or what? I mean,
you can see the horn. My God.
I know. I mean, the guy called me. Did you happen to hear the call last night?
No.
Oh, you didn't hear the guy called and said, Art, you're not going to believe this. You know, I know you're doing Ghost to Ghost tomorrow night, and I must be honest with you, I really didn't believe it. I mean, an evil entity between the two Democrat candidates in a debate, something that could be seen live on TV,
wow.
I didn't believe it. But
none of the networks reported this, right?
No, are you kidding? Give me a break. Do you honestly think they would report this kind of thing? The only place you're going to hear about that is here.
Yeah. Anyway, let me tell you my story.
We're running short on time. I do want to ask your opinion on something.
Sure.
If you were walking down a road and you saw a pair of bodiless boots walking toward you, what would you do?
I'd run the other way.
You'd run the other way. Can you afford to hang on the line through the break?
I sure can. No problem.
All right. Then please do that. So for the guy with the boots, the boots, I couldn't resist. Sorry.
You keep saying you've got something for me. Something you call love, but confess. You've been a-messin' where you shouldn't have been a-messin'. And now someone else is getting all your best. These boots are made for walking. That's just what they'll do. One of these days, these boots are
gone. My story goes back in 1975. My girlfriend and I were driving back to Idaho where I was going to school. We were headed towards Yellowstone Park and going towards Montana East Gate. And we were driving in a little yellow Volkswagen around midnight, and it was kind of snowing. And picture a two-lane road with tall trees in between and no moon or nothing. It's just our headlights.
Gotcha.
And the snow was falling and slushy. And all of a sudden, there was this figure I saw walking right in the center of the road, walking the same direction as me. In other words, her back was towards us.
It was a her?
It was a lady. And at first, I noticed her, and I told my girlfriend, I said, you see what I see? There's a girl walking out here in the midnight, and it's probably about 30 degrees out there.
Right.
And the closer we got, the more detail I can make out. And, in fact, I was going to roll down my window and say, hey, listen, you need some help. Or
sure.
But we noticed that she was wearing very, very old, 19th century garb clothing. Huh. And she had these hobnail boots on. And she had a long shawl. And around her shoulders, and in her hair was long brown hair down to probably a little bit below her shoulder blades. And the closer we got, we noticed something weird was that her hair was completely dry. It was not even wet like, you know, you would expect somebody.
In the middle of a snowstorm, yeah.
Exactly. And I was just about to roll down my window, and my girlfriend goes, don't even stop, don't even look, she's a ghost. And, you know, that freaked me out because I was just about ready to slow down. She goes, don't even look in the mirror. She has no face. So,
oh, my God.
You can imagine, you know, here we are putzing along a little Volkswagen. And I just slowly moved over to the right and to avoid hitting her, and I just moved on. And when we got to the gate, the ranger said, sorry, but the path is closed tonight due to the snow. You mean we got to go back? And he says, well, there's a little motel about half a mile.
So you're thinking you got to drive back by this ghost.
Oh, geez, we were scared out of our wits. So yeah. Anyways, we got to this motel, and fortunately the guy still had a room available. And as soon as we got in the door, in the room, we just locked the door and put the chair up against the wall.
And I take it
an experience.
The rest of the night was uneventful.
Oh, the rest of the night, we couldn't sleep.
All right, my friend, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the story. So, oh my, an entire figure until you get up to it, and then no face. I wouldn't be stopping either, would you? Well, a ghost wouldn't be affected by weather conditions, would it? East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello there, Art. How are you?
I'm okay.
This is Tony in Oklahoma City.
Yes, sir.
I got a couple of pretty weird ones.
Well, give me your best shot.
Oh, they're both pretty good. I don't know which one. I'll give you. It was probably about 1965, and my brother and I both were real Beatle freaks, and I had this portable record player, stereo.
Right.
And we had this in the kitchen, and we were playing Beatle records, Beatle albums on
sure.
the thing.
Sure.
And there was nobody else home in the house. And the living room was like 15, 20 feet away. And Beatle albums playing, and we're sitting there listening. And there's a voice in the living room singing along with the record. As clear as a bell.
Another voice.
Uh-huh.
Not one of the Beatles.
No.
You're sure it's not one of the Beatles?
Absolutely not. And there's no other speakers. The speakers were right there in front of us.
The voice is coming from where?
The living room. About 20 feet away. We both walked into the living room.
Nobody else was supposed to be home?
No.
You walked into the living room.
And there was the voice, as clear as a bell.
Nobody?
Nobody.
Just a voice?
Just a voice. Nothing else there.
Oh, man.
Then another time, at a friend's house. I was probably about 14.
Well, wait a minute. Did the voice just stop when the music stopped? How did it stop?
I don't really remember how it stopped.
You must have been in shock.
Well, no, not really, because there was weird things happening all the time. Footsteps, bumping into something that wasn't there, lights going on and off by themselves.
Anyway, you were going to say another time.
I was about 14, and we were at a friend's house, and he was into car models, and I was. And we were sitting on the floor rolling a car back and forth to each other. Uh-huh. And I was sitting on the floor, and my back was against a couch. And he rolled the car to me, and I missed it. It went under the couch. I lifted the, like a little skirt thing on the bottom of the couch.
Sure.
Lifted it up, looked under there, saw where the car was, stuck my hand under to reach for the car, right in front of the car, where the car was a foot.
A foot?
A foot.
Under the couch?
Under the couch.
A human foot. Not a boot, not a shoe.
A naked foot.
A naked
foot. I felt the instep and up to the ankle. And I looked, and whatever this thing, I mean, it was absolutely there. It was physical. I felt it.
A foot under the couch?
Yes.
Which you laid your hands on and felt physically?
Yes. And I could swear it was not a human foot.
Well, what kind of foot was it?
I don't know. It felt cold and kind of like leathery or something.
Oh, my God. Well.
And I jumped and ran out of the house.
Oh, at least.